Book of Joshua, the 24th chapter, verses 26 through 27. Could we hear that, please?
Okay. Joshua wrote these words in the book of the law of God, and he took a large stone and set it up there under the oak in the sanctuary of the Lord. Joshua said to all the people, "See, this stone shall be a witness against us, for it's heard all the words of the Lord that he spoke to us. Therefore, it shall be a witness against you if you deal falsely with your God."
Thank you. I mean, that, you know, coming into the promised land, you remember the setting, you remember the story of Joshua. But using a stone as a witness, and this would be a permanent marker. Now, anybody seen this marker in Israel today? I mean, when you go to Israel, nobody points out, this is the marker that Joshua set up.
Where in Israel is it?
Well, yeah, you know, we don't know. I mean, kind of permanent kind of things. And there's another reference for a stone as sort of a permanent marker, and that is in 1 Samuel 6 through 18. I mean, in chapter 6, 17 and 18, I think.
"These are the gold tremors which the Philistines returned as a guilt of offering to the Lord. One for Ashdod, one for Gaza, one for Ashkelon, one for Gath, one for Ekron. Also the gold mice, according to the number of all the cities of the Philistines belonging to the five lords, both fortified cities and unwalled villages. The great stone, besides which they set down the ark of the Lord, is a witness to this day in the field of Joshua of Beth Shemesh."
Thank you for working your way through all of those names. They were souvenirs of reminders of what God had done for them. But the great stone, which is a witness to this day, well, the day that was, you know, at that time, we don't know where that is either. I mean, the idea. But certainly, as you go around in different parts of the world, there are a lot of great stones that were set up as monuments. M. Scott Peck has a wonderful book on that, In Search of Stones, that I just love, where they visit some of these big megaliths. So the idea of stones is something permanent. Let's go two slides and illustrate the idea here, please. And I'll turn off one light over here.
Maybe a little bit better here. Yeah, that's another color. Whoops, I forgot. That was shouldn't just slide in here because I forgot the way I put this in.
I think that's
backwards. Yeah.
Stones that are significant today. I was going to show those yesterday and forgot.
The time ran out. So you got to go back to them.
Yeah. Dipping rocks that are significant and stand as markers and in folklore and tradition. Any of you recognize this?
Some of you.
Where is that?
It's the Rhine. When you cruise the Rhine, when you go on a boat, it's not a cruise ship, when you go on the Rhine, that is the Lorelei Rock. And if you know the story, this beautiful woman up there combing her golden hair. I can sing it in German, but I won't. I'll spare you that. And bringing sailors to their death as they were mesmerized by this woman. The point is, this is a kind of big rock that has been used for people as sort of a marker and tradition, and that story goes way, way back. And so it's significant in their history. And this is one that's sort of interesting. This is in England, and the story is, and this we can authenticate, that in the 1800s, an English clergyman was walking along on a Sunday afternoon, I guess at a busy Sunday morning, and got caught in a rain shower. So he found a little shelter here in the niche of these dipping, folded rocks here. And while he was there, he got the inspiration for a hymn. His name was Augustus Toplady. Who do you think, what was the hymn?
Rock of Ages, cleft for me.
See, and so this inspired a hymn. Well, that's sort of left over from yesterday, but it's the idea of rocks as sort of a permanent fixture. And yet the point is that all of us now read enough about rocks moving and things moving. And if you study a little basic geology of your grandkids, are getting what you and I maybe didn't get in elementary school or something. You recognize that rocks are recycled. In other words, around here you will find rocks that are made from pre-existing rocks. Recycling, which is something we got into in the environmental movement some years ago, is something that nature does all the time. You walk through the forest and you see the trees that are blown down and you see how they break up into little rich organic material, which eventually becomes soil. So although we don't see a lot of these things happening in our lifetime, the idea of rocks being recycled. Yesterday we talked about metamorphic rocks, changed rocks. And up way up on Honeymoon Heights is a vein of marble, which also shows up in the mine. Hadn't been in the mine, but it shows up in the mine drawing. Marble, we think, was made from limestone. Chemically the same. Limestone deposits from water, probably marine. You know, so there are a lot of things involved in changes in rocks. Annie Dillard has a wonderful book. Well, some of the things are a little strange, but she really has a lot of spiritual insight. And in her book, Teaching the Stone to Talk, she says, "And the rocks themselves shall be moved. The rocks themselves are not pure necessity, given like a vast complex molds around which the rest of us swirl. They heave to their own necessities, to stirrings and prickings from within and without. The mountains are no more fixed than the stars. Granite, for example, contains much oxygen and is relatively light. It floats. When granite forms under the Earth's crust, great chunks of it bob up, I read somewhere, like dumplings. The continents themselves are beautiful pea-green boats. The Galapagos archipelago as a whole is surfing toward Ecuador. South America is sliding towards the Galapagos. North America, too, is sailing westward. We're on floating islands, shaky ground." That's a poetic version of what geologists are gradually sort of figuring out, which is the why of where there are volcanoes, where there are, of why some rocks are dipping like that, like you saw in the Rock of Ages there. I mean, why they look like that, what makes formerly horizontal rocks tilt like that. It also explains folded mountains, and we don't have all the answers, and I will not go into the history of that. Wagner's, very often there are articles in newspapers in the science section or in magazines, so I won't belabor you with more than you want to be interested in. But if you get National Geographic, you read about the idea of plate tectonics, and everybody's heard about that, right? That the Earth's crust, the outer crust, is not solid permanent. I mean, things are moving, things are changing, and I'll give you evidence of that shortly. They keep changing, but the time span may be so slow that in our lifetime we don't notice anything but maybe erosion by floods or something like that. But the idea that the Earth's crust is segmented, some of that didn't come out till World War II, when there were ships going all over the oceans and they found some real deep trenches. I mean, there's all kinds of evidence that there are segment plates, and I, unless you really want to, I don't plan to go into that. I mean, you can read about it. But the idea that you can find maps where they will show you plate boundaries where things happen. And surely on the West Coast is one of those zones. You've heard this called the Ring of Fire around the Pacific, simply meaning that that's where a lot of the volcanoes are. Not all over the place, just randomly scattered, but the Alaska, certainly the West Coast volcanoes, Mexico, the Andes, South America, you've got, and then Indonesia, Japan, that idea that you've got certain places where there are volcanoes and earthquakes more commonly than others. So we have these things we call plate boundaries. The idea that the continents do not have the same shape that they used to have. And of course, the map here, the map projection, is a little different than you sometimes see. The globe is the only good projection to get the actual shape, depending on the maps. But that's not new to anybody, is it? The idea of plate tectonics, sometimes called sea floor spreading, different things. And that's really something of this century. When I was teaching introductory geology at Texas Lutheran, I had a student who had a parent who was a geologist. And they would say, my dad, this bothers, my dad did not have any of this when he was in college. Plate tectonics has really come into its own in, I would say, the 50s, 60s, 70s. A few years ago, it's been six or eight now, Gustavus Adolphus, any of you connected with Gustavus? They have an annual Nobel conference in which they bring in top-notch people on certain topics. And I went to the one in the Nobel conference on plate tectonics with some of the top people. Now, Nobel prizes are not given in geology, so they sort of got away from the Nobel thing, but they had the top-notch people. And the evidence that something is happening, that the continents are not the same as they always were. They have changed from what we call Pangaea, land masses moving along plate boundaries, and where the boundaries are now, which you can see on that map if you see it in the light, is not where they have always been. Somebody said about earthquakes in Minnesota and Wisconsin yesterday. Well, I don't quite know just what's under there, but there are also evidences of old sutures in the earth, in the middle of a continent, where maybe there was once a mountain range and where there was once a plate boundary, it isn't anymore that is active. So you've got a lot of exciting things happening in geology where people are trying to figure this out. But it's moving. Things are moving, slow or fast. And the mechanism of why it does, not all the answers are known. But as Annie Dillard said here, as we were reminded, the crust of the earth, the outer rocks, generally, what we call continental crust, are usually lighter, less dense, than the ones from deep down. Like we saw some volcano pictures the other day, and I think even yesterday, the dark, real dark black basalt is very dense. Some of that comes from much deeper down. When the lava is much lighter colored, like andesite or particularly rhyolite, some of those names you can see up in the museum, that's more continental crust that has been melted. It has more quartz in it. So there's a difference between crustal rocks, lighter rocks, and deeper rocks. Stop me any time, but... Okay, this kind of map, again, if you get National Geographic or something, you get this kind of map every so often, so it's not terribly strange here. One thing that was found out, especially in this century, was that the ocean floor, it's not just flat, but there are all kinds of features. And we have mentioned that there are a lot of places where there are islands that never quite made it above the surface of the ocean. Or if they did, maybe they were there for a while and the waves then washed them down and they disappeared. And one thing that shows up very clearly from soundings, from magnetic studies, from all kinds of evidence, is that there is what is called a mid-Atlantic ridge, and that this is spreading apart. In other words, it's going this way. There has not always been an Atlantic Ocean, and that this is spreading. And one of the few places you can really get on the mid-Atlantic ridge is Iceland. And I had the wonderful experience of doing 3 weeks of field geology in Iceland some years ago. And you can see seafloor spreading. One, that is along a plate boundary. And one of the things that happens, all right, these segments of the earth It's like when you take an orange and you have the whole orange, and if you just sort of peel it apart in strips, think of those as plates, sort of try to put them together. But there are places where they have been rifted apart. Get that picture. All right, let's see the idea. In Iceland, the middle has very active volcanoes. That's where it's still happening. The Mid-Atlantic Ridge runs right through the middle of Iceland. The new volcano that I mentioned the other day, for those of you who were there, Surtsey, which I think was 1963, when a new island came up and stayed above the water. It just wasn't washed away. It really made a new island. And it was well documented from its very birth. That's right in that line. This is the Vestmannaeyjar Islands, and this is Heimaey. Those of you who were with me that day, well, I have some today, of this new volcano. I was there 2 years after it had come up on this island. But the middle is where the active volcanoes are, geothermal energy. That's why they heat homes with hot water, steam, stuff like that. No air pollution because they don't have any coal or oil. But the outer edges, you see, are much older. This is spreading. New magma, molten rock, coming up from deep within, spreading apart. And this is the lava that's cooled off a lot more, and it's much older, very definitely. You see it's older. And this is the middle. This is the Omni Mid-Atlantic Ridge where seafloor spreading has happened, only this is above ground. They call this the fire chasm, kind of. And this is on the plate boundary at the edge. This is on the North American plate. This was a geology from. It was the University of Northern Colorado that did this. This is the North American plate, and the other side is the European plate, where they have spread apart. How do they know that? They not. This is Thingvellir, where the first Icelandic, if you have Icelandic heritage, good Scandinavians too, where they had their first conference. All right, but they have, the scientists have stuff, have kind of a sensor, like a laser that goes from one side to the other. We're on a hill here, obviously, from one side to another. And they measure any changes. That is spreading apart at a millimeter and a half a month. I mean, it's measured. They know it's spreading apart. Now, a millimeter isn't very big. 10 millimeters to a centimeter, and a centimeter is about the width of your, my middle fingernail. But that means a couple of, over an inch a year. That's not a lot, but it's measurable. In other words, they know this is spreading apart because they are measuring it with lasers. And new stuff keeps arriving. So Iceland is the best example of where really seafloor spreading. This is one of the rifts along here where, you don't see it happen, but that's where the active volcanism takes place. This is on the outer fringes, that peninsula you saw on the first map that's way out to the northwest. This is old lava. And you have moss and stuff that's had time to grow at this high latitude climate, my glove for scale. In that kind of climate, that far north, pretty close to the Arctic Circle, it takes a long time for rocks to break down into soil, right? For anything to grow. And the first thing that grows is sort of a moss. And you will have some sheep that bounce around over this and eat the moss. It's amazing, the Icelandic sheep. And you see, this is in the interior. You feel, it's wild. It's fresh new lava. Seafloor spreading, more new stuff is coming up. It's very dark lava because it comes from way deep. It's heavy, closer to the oceanic kind of rock. So you can see seafloor spreading. You can read all the theories, and how do you know? When you go there, you see it. I mean, it's there. I mean, there's just some wild areas in that interior part where a volcanism is still happening, where they have new volcanoes coming up.
I just threw this in because it shows some of the wonderful basalt columns, which you have around Spokane, kind of same kind of thing, but where the heavy, dark lava kind of crystallizes, and they have some powerful waterfalls, which is another story. And then the new volcano, this was on Haimiai, Elfell they call it, in the Vestmannaeyjar Islands, and we're there 2 years after it erupted, where the sulfur fumes were bad, when it would blow, you had to wear sunglasses, and it just pitted the sunglasses because the particles were so sharp. So anyway, that's sort of the edge of the crater. Still smoking, we took a stick and put it down to a crack, and the stick caught fire. So anyway, Iceland, and that eruption also kind of wiped it out, except it stopped in time, and the people came back to live. Those two-story houses. And anyway, Iceland is a very good example, the best example, of a place where we see this kind of thing. Magma coming up deep within the earth. Things are spreading apart, filling up new land. And there again is the idea where the active part is kind of there. So, okay, one kind of plate boundary then, where something is happening, this is between the European plate and the North American plate, is spreading apart, where you'll have new volcanoes usually coming up. You also have rift valleys. We have someone here who has been in Tanzania and seen the rift. You want to talk about, tell us a little bit about the rift, the area, Ethiopia?
Well, it came down into our area. I was in central Tanzania and left just some magnificent rock formations that were, I feel, much more outstanding than what you even see in the Garden of the Gods. And just layers and layers. A geologist that came to us years ago said that he felt they were the kind of rocks that had been formed under pressure over long periods of time and then through erosion came swiftly to the top. Some are probably a mile and a half, 2 miles up into the air. So it shows a lot of erosion that's taken place over the years.
Now the Rift Valley is not right on an ocean ridge, but it is a rifting apart. The famous Rift Valley in Africa, and really over towards Ethiopia.
Yeah.
And you read a lot about it, and you've been there. And I mean, exciting stuff. This is along the Dead Sea. And that's part of an old rift valley also spreading apart. We're on the Israeli side looking across the Jordan. And the way the mountains are, the Dead Sea and that kind of old rift, you see, rifting is spreading apart. And this is again from one side looking at the other side. Not a very good picture, but you can see that, you know, what's this deep depression doing in the middle there? It is a part of an old rift kind of valley. And some of the rocks around there, this is again close to the Dead Sea, that's my lens cap, but you see they have been pushed around, kind of tilted rock layers. All right, one way then in which we have evidence of the earth is still moving, different parts of the earth's crust is spreading apart, rifting apart. This is a commercial picture, it's not any good. I should throw that one out, but anyway. And that's also a gift from somebody. That's the Himalayas. I have not been there. Anybody?
I've seen them.
All right, great. This was obviously somebody who was in a little plane going over the Himalayas. And one of the things that is known about the Himalayas is that, you can read this in basic geology books, that they are made of fairly light, loose rock. It is not heavy, dense rock, but it is more or less continental crust, lighter rock. And the explanation for the Himalayas is another kind of plate boundary, where instead of spreading apart, you have crunch. In other words, you have continental crust and continental crust sliding apart. They will say India really rafted into the rest of Asia. That India was a separate subcontinent and that by movement
And what causes the movement? That's another story. But that India rafted in to the rest of what was then Proto-Asia, and that collision produced the Himalayas, because the rocks aren't that dense at all. They're loose stuff. That's why some people have fallen on it too. And that's why they're so jumbled. Well, I haven't seen the Himalayas, but this is flying over the Alps. And the Alps are a similar thing. And I know some of you have been to the Alps. That they are, again, supposed to be a collision of two plates of about the same density, continental crust and continental crust. And there's some, this is above Innsbruck in Austria, and that's not from a plane, that's just from a high viewpoint. Notice that these are not horizontal layers, they're all dipping structures. It's very loose stuff, it's not very dense at all. And it sure looks like collision. And also, that's marine limestone stuff. In other words, you know, that there's evidence of fossils and stuff, not deep at all, but shallow seas and stuff, fossil. Looks like collision, bulldozing together. So the Alps are described really as plates, continental plates, jamming up together. Now, not overnight. You know, how long does this take? Wearing down, of course the glaciers are working on them. That's, you can see that from the jagged features. This is on Mount Pilatus, which is, another out of, not Innsbruck, but not Lucerne, near there. You can go up Mount Pilatus, and at the top, there is, that one wasn't, that's still Alps. But this is along the area that's limestone, old limestone pushed up, dipping rock structures, like it's just bulldozers, colliding roads. This is my Mount Pilatus picture. Okay, from the top. And those are little veins of quartz, but that's basically limestone shot through with sort of quartz through there. It's not magma, it's not igneous, but it's explained as old continental rock colliding, pushing together. How are mountains made? That's one way, collision of plates. And you see it in the Alps. Well, here's something that many of you know, that's in the news, everybody knows about that, so I'm not going to dwell on this. But everybody knows that in California you've got plate boundaries, right? And in this case, what's happening? Instead of collision or spreading apart, what do you have?
Sliding.
Yes, transform, right. Mm-hmm. One sliding past the other, right? And for people, we have Californians in here? Yeah. Any comment on that? I mean, you read about this in your papers all the time.
Well, I was in the 1989 earthquake on the Parada, so it kind of leaves a big impression.
Uh-huh. And that it, I think it also illustrates that the movement along a transform fault, as they call it, where plate boundaries, goes by jerks, right? You've got tensiometers and all kinds of instruments all over the place that are taking readings, and you know, there's just so much tension, and then it's got to give and jerk forward. And what are the predictions for California millions of years now? What? Part of it's going to be up by Alaska, the way it's going.
LA will be up by San Francisco in about 10 million years.
Yeah. So I mean, sure, anybody in California is constantly reading about this kind of thing, but the very evidence that there is one plate sliding past the other plate, and a few places they're not real clear. So you've got some places in there where, you know, what else is happening? It's not just a smooth suture kind of, but it works. I did one time take a geology field trip. I go to conventions where they have, or used to, where they have geology field trips. And this was really in along the main San Andreas Fault. And so you hear you have mountains on one side, mountains on the other side, and the middle, the rocks in the middle, the whole structure is just sort of like it had been ground up. Kind of. I flew over it one time
and saw it wonderfully and didn't have a camera, but this is the other side of the main San Andreas Fault. All right, so you've got the other hills, need a wide angle here, but in between the stuff, the rocks just show like they've been squashed and squeezed and folded, and these are mainly schists. They find some actinolite rocks that show high pressure shearing, things of that nature in between. So there's evidence something is happening there, and they are the earthquakes, as you said, sort of get your attention. And there are a lot of places. This was, what was this university, which was built right on the main branch of the fault line, which they didn't know. So this nice little slope here runs along the main fault line. Mm-hmm. So sometimes they don't know that till later, of course, in building. I mean, this is not level right here. Why is it not level? Well, sometimes one part also is pushed up a little bit more over the other. Okay. A similar thing where you have one place sliding past the other is in northern Scotland. You've heard about the Loch Ness Monster, mm-hmm. right? And the Loch Lomond, you know the song, Loch Lomond, Bonnie Bonnie Banks of Loch Lomond. That's an old time, you gotta be my age to remember that one. Anyway, but this is very similar to the California thing. I mean, we've got a different direction. This plate is going this way, that plate is going that way, but you can see it, and this is what it looks like. It's like the San Andreas. And this would be one side going one direction, and that would be the other plate going the other direction, and in between is all kinds of jumbled rock. Now, right now, it doesn't seem to be active like earthquakes. It's called the Great Glen Fault, and the lakes like Loch Lomond lie in that fault. So Loch Lomond and Loch Ness sort of lie in that area. But it's, you can see it, that something has happened here, and in this case, it's one plate sliding past the other and formed some of the features. And when you see the cloud, we didn't get all the way to a Loch Ness. Loch, you know, is a lake. The Scottish term for lake, you know that, don't you? Loch. My son and family live on Loch Hill, Lake Hill, I'm really bald. But anyway, the term loch comes into Ireland. You can almost see the mystery of this water, the deep, but you almost see a sea monster coming up, the monster coming up here. Anyway, all right. And here's another place where this is the North Island of New Zealand, and that also, according to the map, is this kind of sliding past, although there's some debate, sometimes I've seen it with subduction, which we'll get into. But the point here is that the volcanoes are in a row. There are more of them. They're volcanoes in a row, clearly lined up. They're not just one here, one there. They're lined up, which suggests something is happening here, that there is material that is getting to come up here, erupt. You see them in a row. That makes you think of the North Campaign, the whole West Coast, of course. They're not randomly scattered. Evidence that there's some boundaries or something. Well, when you look at the map of the Pacific, again, that's a copy from National Geographic, then, here again, the deep ocean trench. Very deep ocean trenches here. Off California, you don't have continental slope like we do in Texas at Padre Island, and you can walk out a long distance, and it's shallow because it's continental shelf, most of the East Coast. While here, you can't, it gets deep pretty soon in places. Deep ocean trenches, and we've said this is part of the Ring of Fire where things happen. Certainly South America, the Andes, extremely high mountains, are along this area where, again, we've got a plate boundary. But here's something else that's happening. We've said three kinds of collisions so far. What are they? Or plate interactions. One is spreading apart. Another is continental crust right, and heaping up like the Alps and the Himalayas, or we can say sliding past each other, transformed fault. Well, the next kind of plate boundary, which certainly affects us in the U.S., is the idea of this. Now, this kind of thing that happens, we may not see a much of. This is what we've described for the Alps and the Himalayas. And that's how what might make very high mountains. This is lighter. Always the ocean deeper rocks are more dense. All right, when you have a plate, a continental plate, lighter rock, granitic rock, and an ocean plate, more an ocean plate, more dense basaltic rock, when they collide, which would go to the top? The lighter one, right. So in other words, and we call this, and I know you've read this term, we call this subduction, right? Mm-hmm. One goes under the other. So you have a plate subducting under another. And that is supposed to be the main thing that is happening, well, closer to us. But this is Ecuador. And around, that's part just to show some of the Andes. I mean, all around Quito, Ecuador. I mean, they're high volcanic. It's a very active region. They have earthquakes. They have terribly high volcanoes all around, much higher than anything around, even in the Northwest to that extent. Earthquakes, just threw that in terms of, the church wasn't built like that originally, right? You wouldn't build a church like that originally. You can tell that the central part is quite different from this because part of this was destroyed and there are earthquake ruins all around. So originally the whole stone facade and everything like that was the same. Earthquakes are very common in many parts of the Andes. And some pretty steep valleys where you've had earth slides, earthquakes, and so on. This is the eastern part of Ecuador, the Pastaza Canyon. I had a similar picture to this yesterday, again, where there's a great fault escarpment, very active area, explained by an ocean plate pushing underneath the continental plate, and all kinds of things happen. This may be, according to Ecuador, they say this is the highest mountain in the world, Chimborazo. Well, now that you've never heard of that as highest mountain in the world, but here's another thing about it. Where is Ecuador? Why is it called Ecuador? It's on the equator, right? Where is the Earth fatter, from pole to pole or around the equator? It has a middle bulge, right? Equatorial bulge. So the Ecuadorians say, if you start at the center of the earth and you recognize that in Ecuador you are farther away from the center of the earth, so if you figure starting from the center of the earth, then our mountains are the highest in the world in terms of how you figure it. Okay. Anyway, the idea of the Andes and Chimborazo, I was lucky to see they take a train trip there. It's something like, I don't remember numbers, but it's well over 20,000. Powerful, but the idea, okay, you have ocean crust pushing underneath, uplifting, continental crust, volcanoes happen all around, structures are destroyed. This happens actually is in Bolivia, farther inland. I mean, Bolivia is landlocked. But the geology is wild. And the idea is, again, subduction, digging underneath, is just really doing a lot of things. Well, let's get a little closer to home. This is Mount Rainier. And this is what the geologists of the Northwest will say, Mount Rainier from the air. Why are those volcanoes lined up like that? All the way down to California, and so on. It's a little more complicated than just subduction. You also have to recognize
the idea of proto-continents, pieces of land that have moved by some conveyor belt process and wrapped into others. So the later explanation of the Pacific Northwest, and I'm going to do this from Northwest geologist eye to go in that, the bedrock that comprises the North Cascades, okay, came from a place far removed from what is now the state of Washington. Geologists believe that it originated thousands of miles to the southwest in the vicinity of what is now Southeast Asia. The mountains here are a part of a large island or subcontinent which drifted across what is now the Pacific Ocean and docked against North America 50 million years ago. Same thing for California, that it is not just, it was not always one solid piece, but that you've got parts of proto-continents sort of moving in, docking or joining with something else. Well, when they collide, things are going to happen. What evidence do we geologists have to prove this? Fossil palm leaves have been found in the North Cascades. Have any of you seen them? Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, palm trees don't normally grow here, right? These mountains must therefore have been in a tropical location at one time. Also, fossil snail shells were discovered that have no relation to modern snails found here, but are remarkably similar to the snails of Southeast Asia. Okay, I'm quoting from North Pacific, geologists around here, so I'm just saying what they're saying. How could this have happened? The Pacific Plate, which underlies the Pacific Ocean, carried the island continent here as with a great conveyor belt. Where the Pacific Plate once met the North American Plate, it dove underneath a process known as what? Subduction. Right. Rocks in this zone were smashed against the edge of the North American Plate. They were squeezed and folded. We can see that. They melted, recrystallized, and formed entirely new rocks. The gneiss, schist, pegmatite, and other metamorphic rocks, we got around here, which make up the North Cascades, were formed in this way. The process continues today. This plate collision produces other effects. The great volcanoes of our state, Washington, are a result of subduction. The leading edge of the diving border plate melts. Gets down and gets hot and melts. Masses of magma, melted rock within the earth, rise to the surface. If the magma cools before reaching the surface, these masses form granitic batholiths or plutons. If the magma reaches the surface while still molten, volcanic eruptions occur. Mount St. Helens, they think the composition is that of melted continental crust, but they think Mount St. Helens rests on top of the North Cascades subcontinent. And Mount Rainier is an illustration of a composite or stratovolcano. So-called because alternating layers of ash violently erupt and fall on layers of smooth-flowing basalt, which erupts quietly. Mount St. Helens is young. The Cascade of Mount Rainier is supposed to be an ancient giant. At its base are supposed to be the wreckage of older volcanoes that formed 40 million years ago. They also think Rainier rests atop the North Cascades island continent. Floated in. Same thing for Glacier Peak. Same thing for Glacier Peak. Well, if you live in this part of the country, you can read more about that. I'm just saying what the geologists say here. But it really suggests that things have been moving, and that has to be a long time, but that subduction, that's one of the main things where you really have activity, because when you look on the map over there in the light where they have the little arrows going in, where one dives under the other, all kinds of things. Again, look at the volcanoes lined up. See, they're in the line. I mean, forget what year it took there. But anyway, I'm not sure what the others are, but I know that's good. So, I should keep. All right. There is one other thing that we must address here in that little time we have. When you look at where the plate boundaries are, you know, the rims of continent. Oh, we talked about Hawaii the other day, and how many of you have been to Hawaii and enjoyed Hawaii? Hawaii is not on a plate mountain. It's in the middle of the ocean. Same, now, the Galapagos off the coast of Ecuador, but a couple hundred miles out here, are not exactly on a plate boundary either. They're sort of out there. So if you're talking about, you can explain all the volcanoes. They're on a plate boundary. It's where the earthquakes happen. What about Hawaii? Nobody thinks it's on a plate boundary. Okay, there's another explanation. Anybody heard it?
Hotspot.
Yeah, hotspot or mantle plume. All right, let's just quickly run through some Hawaiian islands and see how they're different. Okay, this is Oahu, where most people first land. Honolulu, Waikiki Beach is over there. No active volcanoes, but you know, there you can see that used to be. And what's left? All right, that's Oahu, and there's Waikiki Beach and so on, a diamond head there. But it's not, you know, it's not an active volcano at all, Oahu. And along in on Oahu, you'll see layers of volcanic ash and stuff. Now we'll go to the Big Island. That's where the active stuff happens, right? The island of Hawaii. And the Kilauea Crater and, you know, sort of very fresh-looking lava. I mean, that was pretty fresh, not hot anymore, things of that nature. And the black rocky sand beaches and things. And that's a bog picture. I've never been fortunate enough to be there when it was doing it. But, you know, those some of you have. And you see here that it didn't help the trees. I mean, the island grows bigger. We said that the other day if you were with me for islands. Okay, so you've got a very active island. Well, here's where, then, if you trace the ages of the islands, it is this part of this southeast part of Hawaii where the action is now, right? Maui, we'll go to Maui in a minute. It still looks sort of like volcanoes there. I have not been to Molokai, anybody? And Oahu, that's where we flew in to Honolulu, right? Mm-hmm. And then Hawaii, okay. All right, they've dated these by ages. Okay, the idea then, as you said, is that there's some place there are mantle plumes or hot spots where magma from way deep is sort of eating its way through a plate. And so as the plate, here's the magma, as the plate moves over the hot spot, it sort of works its way through. And so the islands, here's the hot spot staying, right? The islands farthest out are the oldest gradually. The hot spot is someplace here. The plate is still moving. What would you predict eventually? New island, yeah, they've already named it, but they it won't be our lifetime. I mean, they found new island for me here. It'll be a long time. It's in estimates and hundreds of thousands of years or something, different opinions, but new islands forming here. So here's another way where you can have volcanoes happening, which it's not where it's between plates, but it's hot mantle rock as the plate moves over it. Let's just quickly, we have looked at Oahu, Honolulu, and we've looked at the Big Island. This is the next one in line. Okay, this is Maui. Okay, so that would be the next youngest, wouldn't it? I mean, Hawaii, the Big Island is the youngest. Maui is the next youngest. And there you can see volcano shapes when you fly in. You can go up Haleakala. You go from sea level to 10,000 feet, and it's fun to drive. It's good road, and it really looks like volcano up there, but it's not.
I took a bicycle ride down that mountain.
Oh my goodness! Better down than up.
Yep.
Better down than up. Yeah. Wonderful view up there, and you can see the other islands from there. Now the native Hawaiian people have a story. You know, the goddess of the volcano, Pele. And the story is she used to live here, but she moved to Big Island. Which they had a sense of that this was fairly recent stuff. Now this is Kauai, if you remember my map, that's way out there to the north.
And that doesn't even look like volcano. A lot of oxidation, Waimea Canyon, where you have rains a whole lot, you know, oxidation. Two different years or something, or agreement. So that in time, you see, these volcanic rocks are worked down and whatever. But, all right, so I think the Hawaiian Islands illustrate pretty well. But I'm saying consider the rocks. Think of all the people who go to Hawaii and miss out on this wonderful story of why each island is different. And I think that's exciting. You know, you can enjoy the beaches or whatever and not think about it. But I think it's exciting to look at that thing. And so here again, we see the sequence over a hot spot in the middle of a plate boundary. Another one is Yellowstone. We think there's a hot spot under Yellowstone. All right, and there's another group of islands that illustrate that, the Galapagos, which Annie Dillard writes about. And the islands are different in age. Younger ones and older ones don't have the complete, and in this case, the plate is moving in the other direction, so that you're going to have your younger ones and older ones in a different sequence, but the islands definitely have between Hood here and what is the other one? I have a picture. Hood and which is over here. That last one is Hood. And one of these others, I forget which one. Santiago. Hood and Santiago. This is Santiago. You can see fresh lava and stuff. And it's not an active volcano at all. But you can see the same kind of thing, deposits of volcanic ash along the area. Oops, all right, I didn't mean that. But you can see the thin volcanic, the Hoihoi lava like you have on Hawaii and stuff. So the idea is, again, that you have another explanation for where the plates don't quite, where there aren't plate boundaries. We certainly don't have all the answers to this idea of the plate movement. Let me just read you Annie Dillard, who is in awe, particularly of what's happened, as she has been in the Galapagos. The old arcs are moving, right? Yeah. Every live thing wags its home waters, rumples the turf, rearranges the air. The rocks press out. The protoplasm pummels the rocks. It could be that this is the one world, and that world a bright snarl. All right, another thing about Pangaea, the way the continents were. Geologists now are saying that it has not just been once that you had a mania, a bunch of land mass that split at certain boundaries and formed the present continents, but that there have been cycles of that over and over again. And that boggles your mind. But for example, near where I live, well, 100 miles from there, the Enchanted Rock, which a few of you saw, a giant batholith on my picture, granitic rock. They have found rock like that on Antarctica. And there are some geologists who are convinced that way in the past, those areas were joined, which gives you a concept of land masses sort of coming together, splitting apart, reshuffling, continuing creation, kind of, to go on with Annie Dillard. Like boys on dolphins, the continents ride their crustal plates. New lands shoulder up from the waves and old lands buckle under. Subduction. The very landscapes heave, change, burgeons into change. Gray granite bobs up, like it. Red clay compresses, yellow sandstone tilts, surging in forests incised by streams. The mountains tremble, the ice rasps back and forth, and protoplasm furls in shock waves, up the rock valleys and down, ramifying possibilities, riddling the mountains. Life in the rocks, like spirit and matter,
are a fringed matrix, lapped and lapping, clasping and held. It is like hand washing hand, and the whole tumult hurled. The planet spins, wrapped inside its intricate mist. The galaxy is a flung thing, loose in the night, and our solar system is one of many dotted campfires ringed with tossed rocks. What shall we sing?
Well, I'd like to close with a song almost from my friend Herb Brokley. You know Herb Brokley? Done some of the hymns and the LBW, Earth and All Stars, First Campbell, things like that. The idea of this blows your mind. It suggests that creative processes in changing the world are still going on. People in the past perhaps thought that this rock that they put up, like we read from Samuel and Joshua, you know, it'd be there forever. But things change. We see that in our lifetime, like some rocks wear down and change. But the concept of these continents not being the same, I mean, that they've been different. I mean, they've been pieces rafted together, formed, split apart, new land masses made. That suggests continuing creation as far as the earth processes. And Herb Brooklyn has a little poem like here. Lord, if your creation is still unfolding and you are still releasing the power of your might, then put me in love with the fountains that break out of nowhere. Maybe mantle plumes. Deep hidden rivers, silent seas under deserts, and magnify the wonder and wishing of unfolding inside myself. Consider the rocks. Let them move you to awe and wonder. We keep learning. We don't know all the answers. But for me, I stretch my concept of God. What is God still doing in the world and in our lives? So thank you.
Thank you.